Amén. Okay, Pluto, you got me? Yo, thumbs up if you can hear me.
Yep, can hear
Gotcha. How is everyone going? So we've been cooking. And Pluto, you mic on, can you talk? All right, we're just waiting for Pluto. Cool. So I'll give you a quick update where I am. Currently in LA, just been meeting with a bunch of investors today. And shortly I'm catching up with Naval Ravikant to discuss something. Can't say what. And then I'm just on my calendar. So on the calendar today, I catch up with Bain Capital and then Naval, and then the LIF. And then tomorrow, when I land in San Fran, catch up with HackVC, follow up with Polychain. Then I've got on my calendar Founders Fund with Joey Krug. And then we're hosting a Thor Chad's dinner at SDK Steakhouse. Then I fly up to New York. I'll be in New York Thursday morning. And we're staying at the Soho Grand Hotel. Got a call, a touch base with Delphi in the morning there. That should be a cool call. And then I jump on Pomp's podcast at, looks like 10 a.m. on Thursday. Bit of alpha there. And then immediately after Pomp's podcast, we catch up with HackVC. Cavita from Delta Fund, and then I'm catching up with Paper Ventures, one of the LPs at Paper Ventures in New York. Then Galaxy in the afternoon, and then I'm running another Thor Chad's dinner Thursday afternoon. So hopefully, if you're in New York, come by and catch up with me there. Then on Friday, we are Sparkle Ventures, King River Capital, and then I bounce back to San Fran. Cool.
Mic check, guys. Can you hear me?
Got you there, Pluto.
Awesome. All right, so let's give everyone a quick update on the conversation that we were having that we unfolded today and kind of figure out how we're going to get this thing to market, Rune Pool. I think everyone by now in the channels should be versed on the concept of Rune Pool, but if you're not, at simple core, it's basically a mechanism that allows any rune holder to participate in protocol on liquidity. JP, do you want to give a little bit more background on that, or should we just jump right into kind of how we're going to bring this thing to market?
Yeah, so basically, just doing a little tweak there. Basically, the flow is to abstract away the liquidity provision and make it very simple to understand. So, dual LP requires you to hold two different assets on two different chains, and you make two separate transactions and with different block times. You gotta cope with the asynchronicity of it. One transaction could fail, so then you gotta put the assets into pending. And then the user has to come back later, and there's got to be a flow for getting the pending assets unstuck or like committing it. So it's an incredibly complex feature. Not to mention, though, it does have the characteristics of being exposed to impermanent loss. So not only do you need to like first wrap your head around the cross-chain user experience a little, but then you need to wrap your head around the price curve. And for a lot of our users, that's asking just way too much of them. And we've kind of seen this over the first 2 years. That there was kind of like the initial flow of these heavily aligned users who could be dragged onto the chain. They're heavily motivated, so they're willing to like dig into the Discord, into the university, and work out how to set up a cross-chain wallet. That's why we built CrossChain.js, is we were trying to tackle the cross-chain aspect of it all. So we had to build a whole wallet library just to handle cross-chain. That's a lot of infrastructure build out. So then. And we ran out of liquidity, like the total amount of dual LP provided by initial LPs kind of stagnated. So then we went back to the drawing board to try and solve our first attempt was impermanent loss protection. But all we were doing was just subsidizing out Basically, instead of conferring the risk of DLLP back to the DLLPer, we were onboarding all that risk back to the protocol itself. And we stared in the face of a giant liability in December 2022, I believe. December 2022, where we stared a giant liability in the face and we played a bit of chicken with it. And then when the market recovered, we put it back to the nodes who were quite, everyone was quite dissatisfied with that liability. So the nodes then voted to remove ILP and push that risk back to the DLLP holders themselves. So that happened. And then so the state of the play now is we want to abstract the way that you provide liquidity. So it's very simple to understand. You approach ThorChain with the idea that you want to earn yield on an asset, yield on your L1 or yield on your rune. And there's just one product for that user experience. It's a low yield, low risk product, being the Bitcoin Savers, or a higher yield aggregated product called RunePool. Do you want me to pause here, Pluto, to clarify anything, or do you want me to keep going?
No, that's great. Yeah. It's good to give some backstory and context as to how we got here.
Yeah, exactly. So what we want right now, you can go to the protocol and there's 30 different ways to provide to earn rune or rune yield. You know, do you put it against your Bitcoin in the Bitcoin pool? Do you put it against your USDC? And do you wait for a price movement to enter here, enter here? There's just way too much cognitive hurdle. There's too many things you could to weigh up before you actually commit to a quote unquote in capital allocation strategy. There's too many things to understand. So we want to basically massively simplify it back to just playing the incentive pendulum. There should only be two ways to earn rune yield, and it should be either liquidity or security. So you should just play the incentive pendulum. Right now, the incentive pendulum is paying 18% to LPs and like 4% to security side. And as a result, the network's massively overbonded. It's overbonded because it's very easy from a conceptual basis to provide rune as a node operator or rune or delegate rune to a node operator. But there's too much complexity in providing rune to the liquidity side. Like I said, there's too many price curves. There's too many options. So RunePool just says, hey, look, just chill out. There's just two products here. You put it in this rune module, and then the rune module matches with external L1 demand. So as the Bitcoin savers come in, ETH savers come in, the RunePool module will just intelligently in a demand responsive way matching external L1 capital as it flows into the system. But it does that as a single product. And if you think about there's 30 different pools, all on 30 different price curves. And so at every single day, there's a potentially a dual LP who's in maximum pain, what I call max pain scenario. And the analogy I always bring up is if you put 100 people in a room and you take a blowtorch and you aim it at a single person, you're going to make that person shriek and scream around. And their distress is going to propagate to everyone's anxiety in the room. So you collectively raise the anxiety of everyone at the same time, even though you're just blowtorching one person. Instead, if you aim the blowtorch at the ceiling, you raise the ambient temperature of the room in a much slower aggregate way, and nobody really cares. But it's the same net entropy addition to the room. So that's RunePool. But essentially, the aggregate IL will always be less than the peak IL in a single pool. So if you add up a giant module will be the total aggregation of all the IL at the same time. So you're basically socializing and you're aiming the blowtorch at the ceiling than rather aiming it at a single LP. And what that means is the product will then follow the incentive pendulum much closer. So that's the first aspect. So aggregate IL, instead of isolated IL to a single person, you make it aggregate IL. Instead of basically, the pools bouncing around and one having high yields, high L, and another one having low yield, low IL, you're basically making them all lowish IL, and then you just chase the incentive pendulum. The second aspect is the more liquidity there is in the system, the less the volatility. And the reason for IL in the first place is due to volatility. So by increasing the liquidity in the system, you're going to reduce volatility and you're going to professionalize the product better, which means it's more investable. And if you make the product more investable, the people will allocate more capital. So that's the strategy there. And the case in point, back in 2019, we ran Rune Vault, and the thing accumulated 120 million Rune from a small holdership base very rapidly in the case of, like, I think it was 6 to 9 months. Went from zero to 120 million Rune very, very quickly. And so we hope to reactivate our idle Rune holders, of which there's something like 240 million Rune out there that doesn't do anything. I think there's about 150 that's not in Binance, but if you include Binance, then that's the 210 million because Binance has 60 million. So we've been talking with Binance quite a bit over the last 3 years about activating that 60 million Rune, because we're not too excited about 60 million Rune doing nothing. It would rather it do something. They don't want to run nodes, although we constantly ask them to perhaps run nodes and a staking dashboard, but they haven't been ecstatic about that. I think the bandwidth is limited. On the other hand, Bitcoin Swiss are right now spooling up Thorchain nodes because they want to offer staking product for the holders. So you'd be able to go to Bitcoin Swiss and potentially put in Rune, and then that Rune will be allocated to nodes. But as I told them, like, the system is overbonded. It's got so much excess security. Actually, what we need is that single product, that single one-click Rune product that can sweep up all this idle Rune and allocate it across all the pools at the same time in a demand-responsive way. So I'll take questions, or if Pluto wants to focus me on a particular aspect, then I'll pause it there.
Yeah, let's just talk about kind of like where we are today and why we kind of decided to put the Rune pull on a fast track. So, you know, woke up this morning, there's some, you know, users saying like, hey, it looks like we've met the 5 million POL cap, which is basically nodes authorized up to 10 million in deposits from the reserve into protocol owned liquidity. So if people don't know what protocol owned liquidity is, basically, it's a mechanism that keeps the synth utilization at the level that, you know, we want for the protocol to be healthy. So what happens is when Rune goes down, synth utilization goes up. And so protocol and liquidity deposits Rune to bring it back down. Today, the protocol itself owns 63% of the AVAX pool. It did that. It has that because while AVAX was experiencing a pump, the protocol basically was depositing Rune in order to buy some of the AVAX pool. So it actually owns the majority of the AVAX pool today. It also owns 33% of the Bitcoin Cash pool, 10% of the BNB pool, almost 5% of the Bitcoin pool, which is a massive amount. You know, it's almost a million Rune of its own Rune held, and also 38.7 Bitcoin. So like, the protocol itself owns a lot of the dual LP today. And what we're doing with Rune Pool is basically just giving users the ability to buy a share of that existing dual LP base. So that's the first sort of function, is basically giving people the ability to buy into the POL that the reserve already owns. So what it's going to do is when you deposit into Rune Pool, we're basically going to kick some of those LP units from the reserve that currently owns it over to the Rune Pool holders, and then give that Rune back to the reserve. And so what that will do is POL, like, the reserve will still basically account for, you know, when you go to actually like open a new savers position, the initial Rune to pair against it for the dual LP is basically going to come from the reserve still, but you're going to have these Rune Pool deposits that are essentially counteracting that and allowing the whole thing to continue to scale. So the Rune, if you think of any dual LP, like, at its simplest, the L1s are coming from the savers program and the Rune is coming from the Rune pool. So, you know, today it's like, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to just, you know, authorize another, because the ADR that we initially passed, or that the nodes voted for, want, you know, they basically said up to 10 million in POL. So it's like, do we, you know, increase it to 10 million and just start having the reserve acquire more of the dual LP? In this case, I think it's the BNB pool that needs POL in order to bring it back down to the target synth utilization. What are we going to, like, you know, what are we going to do about savers eject? That was also an ADR that was passed recently that says if there is no more POL and we do go above that target synth utilization, do we just start ejecting savers on a first in, first out basis? And really, like, the, you know, what JP and I kind of concluded was that, like, both of those actions are sort of backwards looking. They don't actually solve the problem. They don't actually create new capabilities. They don't create new utility for Rune. It's just applying sort of like the same sort of, and these risk safeguards have worked. Like, POL has been excellent. It's helped to scale the savers program, but the reserve itself is finite. And so what we need is to source that Rune from third parties, from people who are actually interested in providing liquidity, in growing the TVL of Thorchain and enjoying in some of the yield. Because right now the yield is all just going to the reserve. So give people the ability to participate in the POL program, kick some of that Rune back into the reserve, and allow the user base to take over the share of protocol and liquidity that exists today. So how are we going to do that? Basically, there's a couple ways. We could sit here and, you know, I could work with my team and we could, you know, build out the full Rune pool feature and wait until it's 100% feature complete and then ship it and launch it. And, you know, that's probably going to take weeks to do. We have a jam-packed roadmap right now. The next release we wanted to do is a hard fork, which is basically going to, you know, going to take a lot of bandwidth. So JP and I figured, why wait until after the hard fork, until another month has gone by, and until we actually ship Rune Pool? We can ship Rune Pool today. With a more bare bones scaled back approach. So we're going to opt for two-phase approach. And it's in phase one, we're just going to stand up the Rune Pool model and allow people to start depositing into it. And that actually helps us to gauge the demand. We'll easily be able to, you know, quickly be able to see how much is there for product. We'll be able to create a buffer of Rune, because right now we're over the POL limit. And so there's immediate demand for no POL, for new POL. So should that come from the reserve? Why would it, when we already have a plan in place to allow the Rune Pool users to provide that instead as liquidity? So what I think what we should do is we should continue to, you know, sort of run up this this sort of demand for POL. And it, you know, in what I'm guessing is going to happen is that the demand for Rune Pool deposits is quickly going to outmatch that, so that the moment that we actually you know, enable the logic to have the Rune Pool module start essentially kicking out the reserve and, you know, acquiring a share in the dual LP, is that we'll immediately see that buffer get spent and that there's an immediate, you know, supply deficit in order to allocate that new Rune Pool deposits too. So I think it's actually probably better to launch the feature this way, to start accepting Rune Pool deposits first, and then to turn on the logic to actually start pooling them once there's sort of like a healthy, you know, demand for it. And that was just kind of a development that happened today. And really, like, you know, I think it's just like we were feeling the energy, like, why wait? Let's just get these, you know, the feature out there and start accepting deposits. And then we can fast follow in the very next release that actually does the, you know, the LP accounting. So that's the plan right now.
Yeah, 100%. So just back up a little here. It's accumulate the deposits, project the interest, track the metrics. This can all be done in a module, and that can happen over the next few weeks. It might take 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks to accumulate, you know, 5, 10 million, 20 million Rune. And that can be done over the next 2 or 3 weeks. So then we can do the hard fork, we can do the upgrade, and then we can fast follow with the POL matching. So I just want to confirm, the question is, why is POL only in some of the pools, but not in all of the pools? Well, that's because so far today, POL's activation behavior has been price responsive, but not demand responsive. So that's why we've kind of moved away from synth assets being the main arbitrage assets, and now synth assets are just a IOU representation of the savers deposits. And that's why we ship trade assets, because trade assets fills up the XX security, and more on that in a second. So now that we've kind of freed up and we've now Synthas is just purely a savers IU deposit strategy, and Trade Assets is now the main arbitrage facility. We can instant match POL much faster to incoming demand. So then what will happen is we'll fill up this module with Rune, 5, 10, 20 million Rune. Let's see what the Thorcheds can muster over the next month. And then we do the instant match POL. So then as the savers come in, the Bitcoin savers, the ETH savers, we've got all the Rune to instant match and drop into the protocol and like basically start vertically growing the TVL very quickly. And we've got a lot of demand for savers products. We believe there's hundreds of millions, potentially billions of dollars worth of demand there. And it's just a matter of basically matching and filling up. But we've got to have that Rune ready. Before we can turn on the savers deposits, we've got to have that Rune ready in the Jump module. So as Pluto was saying, now's the time to build up that module. And it's actually a very simple product. It will just be a message deposit, which we'll be able to do on most of the ThorChain ecosystem wallets. And that Rune will go into a module and we'll sit there, be getting ready to deploy. So we might as well just do that now. And secondly, is then we go out to the market and we'll stimulate, provide stimulus in the market in order to drive those savers deposits to match the TVL. Now, then what happens is and then. So as the Rune module has, Rune pool module is growing, but clearly we've got, you know, 5, 10, 20 million Rune there sitting ready to be deployed. Then we go and activate our inbound demand channels for Bitcoin, Ethereum, et cetera, savers deposits. But we've got that Rune pool ready to instant match and drop in. So the liquidity will increase. And then what happens next? Well, as incentive pendulum switches back to nodes and the volatility of Rune starts to calm down because the TVL just keeps growing, growing, growing at that price point, then Rune becomes a more investable product. When it comes to the nodes actually just want P&L. They want to commit, say, $1 million of capital, you know, $5 million worth of capital on one side, and then earn predictable yield on that. They don't want the principal doing crazy forexes up and down on the daily. They just want it to be big lump of capital that retains its investable characteristics and earn reliable, consistent yield. So by driving up the TVL, by solving the user experience and calming the volatility, Rune becomes more investable. And, you know, a month ago when I was in Switzerland talking with Bitcoin Swiss over it, you know, they said, look, you know, Rune is so volatile, so we can only really give it a 25%, 30% LVR. You know, Bitcoin is less volatile, so it's got a 55% LVR. It all comes down to volatility. The more calm your asset is, the more on-chain liquidity there is, the more blue chip it becomes and more investable. And so when we go to these institutional investors in my next roadshow next month, and I'm going to be raising at least $100 million for an on-chain DEX liquidity fund, there's a lot of demand there. And on my fund roadshow, I think I've hit like 50 funds now. There's a lot of funds who are watching a Bitcoin ETF live, an Ethereum ETF next. And then they go, holy shit, we need a way to swap between the two. It's clearly multi-chain. And so the next logical progression is, well, we need a cross-chain protocol. So it always comes back down to ThorChain and Rune because it's the leading cross-chain protocol in this space. So just because we've got two ETFs out there validates that multi-chain thesis, which validates a cross-chain liquidity protocol. So in August and beyond, I intend to get back on the roadshow and raise $100 million to stick in cross-chain liquidity. But that's going to require a blue chip asset to put this demand into. So we need to calm the markets. We need to increase the TVL, increase the liquidity. That has to happen now. So that's the strategy. So step one, increase TVL. Step two, calm the markets, calm the volatility of Rune so that becomes more investable. And then we can bring more institutional capital in on actually both sides of the incentive pendulum. So that's the road to 100 billion that I keep talking about.
Yes, and the final step of that equation, also stimulate volume through more integrations, which I think we're going to land two or three this year that are bigger than any of the other integrations that we already have. So, you know, that's Nine Realms' role. We're going to continue to play that role and bring, you know, all the volume possible to the protocol. We're only plugged in today in 20% of the places that we want to be, and by the end of this year into next year, we'll be pretty much everywhere. ThorChain will be the ubiquitous cross-chain protocol. So yeah, a lot to look forward to there. All right.
Yeah.
Should we take some questions?
Go for it.
Cool. It is mentioned in the docs that the Runepil IL would be less of an isolated IL. How can we solve IL on a single asset pool? You cannot solve IL. Like, there's no way to solve it. It's just about making it less intense, like JP was saying, making it less intense for the individual LP. If they entered into the pool 20 days ago and then, you know, 20 days later, they, you know, the one of the assets, the L1 asset, experiences you know, a large drop in price or a large pump relative to Rune, you're going to experience IL. The goal is to basically make it so that the IL that it on any given day, it's not going to be focused on one or two LPs that come into the, you know, the channel and start, you know, making a mess about it. Like, in order to be a dual liquidity provider, you know, it's kind of a skill thing. You have to like time the market. It's a complex financial product. And the goal of this product is to be simpler for people. So you can earn Rune on your Rune, you can earn asset on your asset, and you're going, you know, the people who earn Rune on their Rune are going to be exposed to IL through Rune Pool. There's no way around that. But if everyone is pooled together, it's going to be less than if you say, you know, entered yesterday. You're just going to get, you know, whatever the IL is that, you know, the entire Rune Pool has experienced, divided by, you know, you're just your minus little share of that. So I hopefully that answers that.
Yeah, exactly. So if there were just two assets on the blockchain, a Bitcoin and a stablecoin, and then Rune was the combined asset, and you provide a liquidity at the correct proportion to match the liquidity exposure of that Rune in each pool, no matter if Bitcoin pumps or dumps against USDC, and like let's just say there's no external Rune market, it's just ThorChain was the only market for Rune, then Bitcoin pumping is causing negative IL on one side, especially with the synth kind of like leverage there. But also, it would the Rune quantity would be losing on one side, but the Rune quantity would be gaining in the other pool. Does that make sense? Because the ones are going up, one's going down. So in aggregate, if you added up those two positions and abstracted it and gave it to the user as a single Rune balance, right, that Rune balance would be far less volatile on rather than just the individual Rune pool, the Rune LP positions, because one's going up and one's going down. So add them two together. So there still will be volatility. So this product is not called like a Rune savings account or like a Rune vault that's trying to send the wrong message to the user that they've got a Rune savings product and the principal will never go down. That's the incorrect message. You can do that to the Bitcoin savers, because that's the kind of the product there. But for the Rune pool, you are pulling in an index that matches all the assets at the same time, all the highly volatile long tail L1s, the low volatility blue chip L1s, the stable USDC, the stable coins. So you're just deploying pro rata to all the pools at once. And you're basically saying, look, I don't care anymore about prices on the daily or prices in the pools. I don't care about how much to allocate in this pool versus that pool based on external demand. I just want exposure to everything at the same time. In fact, all you're getting exposure to is the liquidity fees and the off the incentive pendulum. That's if you just put in Rune pool, the only thing you're worried about then is the incentive pendulum. It's such a simple product. So instead, you just look at the incentive pendulum and go, well, it's paying 18% on the LP side and 4% on the security side. Where should I allocate my Rune? Well, clearly liquidity. And then let's say the TVL fills up to the max and the incentive pendulum is playing off to the nodes. And now it's like 3% liquidity, but like 20% nodes. Well, then you should withdraw your Rune out of Rune pool and go delegate to a node. So it becomes super, super simple. It's like you have one barometer of success, one decision. Where's the incentive pendulum? Oh, it's liquidity. Okay, I'm just going to, you know, deposit in Rune pool, wait 6 months. Where's the incentive pendulum? Oh, it's paying nodes. Okay, I'm going to pull my Rune out of Rune pool and go delegate it to Christian's delegated node or D5 Sammy's nodes. Boom, so simple. So you just, a single thing, rather than going to the protocol today and you look at 30 different pools and you go, well, which pool should I put it in? Should I put in this pool, that one? Well, how much? This amount. We just want to take away all of that. Massively abstract out the user experience. And everyone's saying, well, how do we get mainstream adoption? How do we get mainstream adoption? Well, you got to solve the hardcore user experience problems and you got to think back to first principles. And that's the direction we're taking.
Yeah.
There's a question here. The more bullish you are on rune, the less you should want to use add to the rune pool, since a mooning rune would lead to the highest IL. Yeah, I wouldn't think of it as the highest IL, but I want to add to the rune pool, but that this is what's going to make me hesitate. Kind of a catch 22. Yeah, so if you look at like the last couple days, like the last week, the amount of rune that the that POL owns, essentially it's P&L in rune terms, is up super high. So yes, you're right. Actually, rune going down causes essentially more of the it creates more yield in rune terms for the rune pool. So just because it's like in these last couple of weeks that the price of rune has gotten down relative to the L1 assets, rune pool is basically earning more rune. Yes, the dollar value of that rune is probably less relative to where it was before, but overall the pool has earned more rune, which is what you want. If you're in the rune pool, you want to earn more rune. So it's, you know, every user has to make their own decision about when they get in and when they get out of the rune pool. But really, over the long term, as there are more, you know, as there are more deposits that are attracted to rune pool, like that's when we get into this state where all that you're really experiencing is the liquidity fees, as JP said. Like, the reason why there is volatility is because there are so many people holding and speculating on the asset on the sideline, that, and there's not, you know, that organic, you know, demand center for rune in the protocol. Then that's what actually causes like these decouplings, you know, of the IL and the price and of your total yield, in, you know, in a liquidity pool. But if you just sit in the rune pool and ride it out, and we also are to attract as much rune as possible, like if all of the rune in the protocol were either let me put it this way: if half of the rune, the circulating rune in existence, was bonded into nodes and half of it was in rune pool, there would be no IL. Like, you'd basically, the liquidity fees from one pool would essentially make up for, you know, the loss in the other direction, and you're just basically seeing up only. And it probably won't be that way for, you know, some period of time, maybe ever. But if you just look at the dynamics of rune pool and savers, and if all of the circulating rune was actually locked in the protocol where it's most productive, that would actually be the best possible scenario for all of the market participants.
Yeah, 100%. That's correct. And really, like, our biggest market for rune pool will be Binance itself. So as soon as we have this feature live and it's starting to earn yield, we're going to be campaigning to get a earn dashboards integration on Binance. So like the 60 million odd rune holders who are never going to touch self custody, well, else they would have already, will be able to one click deposit and start earning yield. And actually, under the hood, Binance will be doing a message deposit transaction, and that rune is going to literally leave Binance vault and go into its module where it's owned by the protocol. Just wrap your heads around that. So on the face of it, like, there'll be an earn dashboard on Binance, but under the hood, Binance will be doing message deposits, and that rune is literally going to leave the Binance vault, go across the protocol, and be stuck in a module that the protocol owns. Just wrap your heads around that. And so if we business BD that up hard, potentially there's 60 million rune on offer right there and then from users that would have never have participated in the protocol. So that's why I'm incredibly bullish on this feature. We're actually going to be draining Binance vaults right in front of their very faces, which, you know, if anyone that's hung around with me for multiple years know I'm incredibly competitive and I love taking down centralized our infrastructure. Anyway, that's the long-term aspect though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a question for you guys about current POL behavior. So I know that the plan is to change POL to a deposit as a match when savers enter. Are we going to continue the behavior that POL does currently, where it deposits as a result of synth utilization, or are we deprecating that in favor of only the matching behavior?
Yeah, I think that we're going to keep that behavior as well, but you shouldn't need it as much. Like, again, as we essentially attract more rune into the rune pool, it becomes less volatile. Like the price in aggregate of you know, the value of Rune in the Rune pool more closely matches the value of the L1s and the savers, and you end up having less volatility. That also, you know, just less reliance on synths overall, and the migration to trade accounts will help in that regard too. So it's like, that should remain there, but my hypothesis is that it doesn't get used as often. We don't, because as long as, you know, as we're matching the rune on the way in, we're not actually, there's no like, because right now, when someone deposits a savers, like that creates like a quick bump in the, you know, in, you know, you're basically buying rune because you're swapping half of your L1 to rune and then putting it into dual sided liquidity. And then so someone else can just like arbitrage that out. It doesn't make sense to give that opportunity to arbitragers or to the market. The rune pool will basically just take, instead of like swapping that and then like arbing it, giving it that little price bump, RunePool will immediately take that capacity. And so you won't see the sort of clip up on the way in, and you won't see that clip down on the way out for savers. And so, like, you know, I think that it's less likely that just external market factors, you know, play a role on synth utilization once the savers POL match is live. So it won't be as much of a that protocol. I mean, that will not be the mechanism that like that stimulates POL demand. It will be the actual savers L1 deposits. So yes, we'll keep that in place as like a safety mechanism to make sure that the synth utilization stays where it should. But it should just like its role will become less and less vital, and at some point it could even be potentially phased out.
Got it. So exactly. I also had a question kind of related to that about what if the rune pool, so I'm assuming we're going to get a ton of demand for rune pool deposits, you know, say, you know, 10, 20 million rune, like within a couple of months. And that means we'd also need that much demand on L1 savers. So like right now we're pretty close to the savers cap, which means the yield is pretty low, and especially with ADR 14 kind of coming down the pipe, which will decrease the synth utilization at which a savers receive zero yield, then it might be a while until there's actually capacity to deploy that much into rune pool. So I was wondering if there's any thoughts on like mechanisms to get that deployed, whether that's just deploying it through the current behavior or what you guys think about that.
So it will be more aggressively deployed once we have POL matching. Savers matching. So right now it reflexively deploys based on price, but we want it to be demand responsive. So every one Bitcoin comes in from savers, boom, one Bitcoin worth of rune gets dropped in at the same time. And then we can more aggressively raise the TVL. So that's how we'll play that game. And that's why currently POL isn't correctly distributed across the pools, because it was only just being price responsive. And we want to move away from that behavior to be demand responsive. So that the POL deployment more accurately represents the exogenous demand for savings products, which is actually the correct behavior. But in order to do that, we had to move away. It basically, POL matching on savings deposits kills the utility of synth for ARB. You can't ARB anymore with it because there's no price change anymore. So that's why trade assets was a necessity. And trade assets is actually a better product for arbitrage, because you've got zero slip entry exit. You know, you basically minus the L1 gas fees, you basically get a much closer representation of your trading capital, but it's still an on-chain, Thorchain asset. Now, traders' assets is going to be a primitive that we're going to keep exploring, and so on and so forth. So trade assets could become the bedrock of, you know, limit orders and more things that we build on top. Now, I want to explain why we never pursued trade assets before. Earlier on in the days of Thorchain, when it was very easy to Sybil attack the network and run a node and potentially steal money, we had to be very clinical and absolutist about our approach to security, because a single node with, you know, 33%, 40% of the nodes could basically just kind of like shut the whole network down or like pause it. And if you got to two-thirds of the network, you could start stealing money out of the vaults. These days, it's much harder to achieve that level of penetration into the system. And a lot of our node operators here have demonstrated time and time again that they have what I basically a level of altruism, which is unaccounted for. So essentially, we designed Thorchain for malicious, almost like 100% malicious parties, like non-colluding parties, that is. So basically assuming every single node operator wanted to actually steal money out of the system. But because of our approach to that, we have essentially built up a system that rewards people who work together to just follow the rules. And as a result, there's almost no malicious parties in the network. Those malicious parties are very mercenary. They don't come. So we are undercounting and underqualifying the level of altruism in the network. And what this means is if we fill up the TVL to max caps, right, and for some reason there's an over demand of the features and trade assets, basically means there's more TVL in the system than node security. In the previous 3 years ago, we would have panicked and gone, holy shit, there's suddenly a bunch of nodes can get together and start stealing money, right? But because the network is so much more decentralized these days, if TVL gets up to the security caps and temporarily goes over it, we're not actually worried anymore because the nodes still have to do a massive collusion attempt. They still have to want to destroy the network in order to get out the money. And in fact, a lot of the nodes are altruistic and they'd rather go, no, let's just look after the network because it makes us a lot of money. And then we can make money into the future. We can keep making money. So trade assets will, our current trajectory with Room Pool plus Savers plus trade assets may in future get to a point where there's more TVL in the network than security. And I'm just preparing you all for that now and saying that's going to be okay. And we actually want to see how far we can pull this string and how much capital we can get into the system. Now, another feature that we would have never have contemplated a few years ago was a compound-like lending system where you would wrap your Bitcoin in 10 Bitcoin and borrow someone else's USDC because we would have a position that you could not secure assets outside of the incentive pendulum, so assets outside of the pool. So that's been the lending product so far, but basically sucking into the system, we could secure it. Now, we do have an open mind that as we explore this kind of more open-minded system about security, that we could actually bring in a compound-like P2P lending system. So you would deposit a whole bunch of trade assets on one side, 10 Bitcoin, and you could withdraw out someone's USDC on the other side and pay them an interest rate, and there'll be like a dynamic reserve ratio interest rate. And these assets wouldn't live in the pools. They would actually utilize the trade assets. And so there could be more products that we can explore with adoption of trade assets now and a kind of small shift in security as we start exploiting the altruism, not exploiting, but utilizing the altruism demonstrated by the node operator community, which is not going to happen until we actually get more nodes into the system and whatnot. So there's an interesting roadmap ahead where we start exploring more ideas and features and turning off the older, riskier ones. And we know that like a compound or Aave style lending market, P2P, works really well. There's a huge amount of demand for it, right? So the thought shares are always open-minded. We're always willing to try a feature and sunset it, like ILP is an example. Try a feature, and then we have this new direction that has a stronger and longer roadmap. And so we slowly and calmly deprecate the old feature. So we're definitely open-minded to exploring what trade assets can do, building a compound-like earning system where you kind of have these match reserve ratios against supply and demand. So just stay tuned. There's a lot of stuff coming down range for the protocol. Just on that, unless Pluto wants to take a question, there's another one. What's the time frame incentivizing arbitrage to move away from since if they drag the fee? So they will have to. They will be forced to. Once we have POL matching since savers deposits, you cannot arbitrage any longer with synth mint burn. With synth mint. Synth burn, you can still arbitrage. So these arbitrage agents will have one last chance to do an arb with burning synth. And they will have 0 point to mint again because there'll be zero arbitrage opportunity. So there'll be a natural flow of arbitrage capital away from synths into trade assets. So there's no need to like accelerate it. It would just happen naturally.
Yeah.
Scrolling the chat, go Pluto.
Yeah, I was just going to say too, you know, with Rune Pool, obviously, you know, the caveat I would give for everyone listening is to obviously do your own research. Everyone's experience with the product will be different depending on when you enter and when you leave. You might experience negative IL using the product. You may have excellent success with it. So this is not a risk-free product. Nothing in crypto is risk-free. Nothing in finance is risk-free. So, you know, we encourage everyone to do their own research. But I think the idea behind launching the Ruin Pool and accepting deposits now, you should only use that with money that you, not saying that you're willing to lose, but that it's an experiment. We want to see how many people are willing to use this product and who want to be early movers and early adopters of this product. If you don't want to have any risks, then I would just say, you know, use the product to make swaps. Do not try to, you know, or just become a saver. This product is going to be for the people who want to perform an to participate in an experiment that may have the ability to pay out outsized yields in relation to nodes right now. Right now, nodes, again, only getting 4% bonding APY, 18% of the block rewards going to, a much larger percentage of the block rewards going to LPs. So, you know, again, this is a experimental protocol. ThorChain has been one grand experiment in can we create the largest possible cross-chain liquidity in the world, and so far we're exceeding on it, but we are succeeding on it, but we need to continue to create and experiment with new features, and you know, that's what I love everyone here for showing up on such short notice and for getting excited about this. It's going to be an experiment that we're all going to, you know, to see how it goes, and you know, I just want to prep everyone for that, because it's harder. It's impossible for any of us on this call to predict how lending would perform, how savings would perform. These are just ideas that we conceptualize from first principles. We try them, and to JP's point, if they don't work, we have no problem sunsetting them. We could sunset the savers program, but you know, we believe with strong conviction that it is the best possible building blocks upon which to build. You know, the liquidity needed to be the largest cross-chain liquidity platform. So that's, you know, a bit about why we're doing it. But again, I just thank everyone for kind of being along for the ride and for being down to, you know, participate in this grand experiment.
Yeah, so like Pluto was saying, there's no way you can spec out the perfect cross-chain liquidity protocol. You know, we can be directionally correct, as in, it makes sense that you can swap Bitcoin to ETH via liquidity pools instead of like on-chain order books, right? That makes sense. And it makes sense that the protocol is secured by this kind of indigenous asset that's difficult to civil attack. So the ThorChain design is directionally correct in the sense that it's doing the right things in the right direction. But I'm telling you right now that the hardcore builders that sit every day and ship code are hardcore builders. They're in the arena. They've got the finger on the pulse. They're watching for the latest design to mature. They will quickly adapt and pivot. You know, it just, I mean, Elon's launching starships right now, and he's happy that every second one blows up in front of him. You cannot build hardcore stuff without getting in the arena, trying this, trying that, with safety rails, with guardrails, obviously. You know, Elon is not putting humans on his starships. He's just putting cameras and Tesla batteries and a whole bunch of Methalox. It's like you have the guardrails, and you try and experiment, and you push hard, and you're in the arena, you talk to users, you do Discord stages, et cetera, et cetera. And they are the people right now shipping lines of code to ThorChain, and they're open mind. I mean, streaming swaps was a 180 degree from the original position that, you know, you force users to pay high fees. Well, we took an alternative approach. No delegation, again, a 180 flip on that, because we recognize that once the node operator community was decentralized, you could attract some more capital. So there are some hardcore builders shipping lines of code every day, and there's no correct solution, but there's just a directionally correct solution. And that's why we're willing to flip around, try different things with guardrails to educate the users of what they're getting into. So it's an exciting roadmap ahead. I've managed to drag that mighty Hail Hydra back in. Sorry, Heimdall back in. That's his other Discord persona. And we're shipping the lines of the code right now to support Solana. We'll probably ship it faster than any other protocols because we know what we're doing. And we're willing to reposition our security posture on that. You know, 2 years ago, we were hardcore about every node must run a full node. But coming at it from the Solana point of view and trying to add five L2s at once, you know, we can't make every node operator in this community suddenly increase the node cost by like double overnight. That's not something you can easily scale. So we're willing to readjust our positioning on RPC, right? And it's a market grab. We want to aggressively grab the market over the next, you know, 12, 18 months. And we will get back into the grind and solve some of the decentralized aspects of that in the next bear market, in the next cycle. So what's coming down range is an aggressive movement towards Solana, L2s. And I've been, you know, working my way into the Telegram community because I think Telegram is the next $100 billion on the ecosystem. You know, the thing isn't even listed on Binance, yet it's got almost a billion users. And Pavel every single day is trying to like drop little breadcrumbs in to incentivize them to pick up ton coins to power his giant ecosystem. So it is a $100 billion ecosystem in the market and in the making. Now, this is just validating our thesis. You know, you've got five different cross-chain major chains right staring in the face. You've got Bitcoin, you've got EVM, Modular Land, you've got Solana, Monolithic Land, you've got Telegram, which is application-specific land. Boom. The death, taxes, and a multi-chain future is what you can bet your money on. And because of the multi-chain future is real, you might as well bet your money on a cross-chain liquidity protocol, which, you know, who cares about which major chains will make it over time? There's always going to be a need for cross-chain. So you're in the right group. You're backing the right people. You're not backing founders that have abandoned. I'm on my way to New York to hang out with Chad, and I'll get the selfie and we'll post it straight to Twitter. We keep building. I'm going to jump off in the next 3 or 4 minutes to go catch up with Bain Capital, but we'll speak soon.
Thanks, everyone. I don't see more questions in the audience, but if guys typing now comes through, nope. So yes, we can. I guess we can wrap it here. Basically, we'll be on for async questions, but like I said, in the chat, I'm gonna absolutely lock in right now and fucking slam espressos until I get this shit done, and then we're gonna launch it in the next release. So that's my commitment to you all. We'll start accepting those deposits, and then in the subsequent release, directly after that, we will add the functionality that basically does what I was talking about. It basically just kicks the reserve out of POL and it enters the Rune Pool module. So thanks, everyone. Yes, I agree. This is better than Twitter Spaces. We got a lot of good questions. Everyone in this chat, you know, seems relatively well-versed on the actual economic design of ThorChain. So it's just really nice to get some good questions from people who actually understand what's going on here. So thanks everyone for joining. I'm firing it up. Let's get going and ship this shit, guys. I'll see you all in the next Twitter Spaces. Hopefully, I probably won't be around to do one this week, but Cal, you and I, he just left, but yeah, Cal and I will probably host one next week, and hopefully it's live by then.
Cheers, guys. All right, guys. Talk soon. See ya.
Bye.
Ship it. See ya.